This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
FUBAR Radio presents.
Hello, Volkswagen.
Today, I am joined by probably one of the most incredible guests we've ever been blessed with on this show. Opposite me is the unbelievably incredible Rose McGowan.
Thank you, Callum. What a lovely introduction.
It's one you deserve.
Women are so instrumental in gay rights, in its history, as it should be.
Yeah.
You know, straight or gay, and certainly trans women who kicked off Stonewall and that whole thing and fought so hard for rights and are still fighting so hard for rights. But it doesn't take away from the fact that the white male power structure is what it is.
It is what it is, and it's there, and it's a thing, and we have to acknowledge it and fight it.
Every Wednesday.
Callum McSwiggin.
From 6 p.m. FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome back to the Callum McSwiggin Show. Today, I am ridiculously excited to be joined by the absolutely stunning, the beautiful John Luke Roberts. How are you doing, John?
Hello, I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for that introduction.
It's great to have you here. And I think you're self-described as a ridiculously hilarious comedian.
I would never do that. maybe that's in my press release. I had a flush of anxiety as you said that out loud. I felt like really, I'm not, do they think I'm like this? I try and make people laugh.
Sure. So tell me a little bit about what you do. I know you do some incredible stage shows.
So I'm an absurdist comedian. I do big, stupid live shows with loads of different sort of characters and voices, and it's basically an hour of silliness. The show I'm touring at the moment is a manifesto for absurdism. So it's sort of trying to justify going on stage and being stupid as something worthwhile to do.
No, I absolutely love that. How did you fall into the world of absurdist? Is that what we call it?
Yeah, absurdism. Well, it's a fancy name for mucking around.
Yeah.
It's always appealed to me. I always like the stuff, the comedy you watch, and in fact any art which changes your view of the world and maybe lets you see how stupid a lot of things you take for granted are and how many systems there are which you just go along with because you think that's the way things are done, because
sure,
that does seem to be the way that we're done. And absurdism lets you hold up something to the light and go, actually, this is daft. This doesn't make sense.
Well, I do find that, like, so many ordinary things in life are very ridiculous when we think about them. I mean, I always talk about, like, the act of sex itself.
Yeah.
You know, it's smashing genitals together.
Yeah.
It's an absurdly ridiculous thing to do.
And
yet
not
humans,
just genitals together, they're also what you're urinating from.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Your waste area, as you might say.
Yes. Mad. Let's all stop.
Yeah, it is insane. So tell me a little, I can't even say the title of your show. All I want to do is bum bum, but I can't do it. Can you do it?
I normally say all I want to do is FX gunshots with an FX gun reloading and an FX cash register and perform some comedy. But you're welcome
like
to do the sound effects.
I can't do the sound
well,
effects.
Well, if you do the title, I'll try and do the sound effects.
Okay,
that
sounds great. Okay, so it's all I want to do is with a and a ding and perform some comedy.
Yeah, that's it. That's basically it.
That's beautiful. I feel like you should learn to do that whole thing.
Well, I can. I just wanted to make it feel like an inclusive team experience.
Thank you. I feel very included. Thank you so much for including me in the process. So this was a smash hit on last year at the Edinburgh Fringe, I believe.
Yes, and I can actually say that honestly without like just saying
this isn't
a
fit.
It was critically acclaimed.
It was
lovely. We sold out the run, added extra shows. It was a real delight. Yeah,
amazing. And are you bringing anything new? Is it kind of a carbon copy of that, or are you injecting a little bit?
So the tour show's longer. Things stretch and change, and it's all you always. I think you have to change things a bit, or it can become a bit like petrified. It just goes
sure,
a bit stale. So we'll keep it fresh for me as well. So yeah, it's the same show, but it changes and it ebbs and it flows, and there's probably about 20 minutes more sometimes than there was originally.
I think what I find really, because I think I've seen some shows, not necessarily similar to yours, but that kind of fall into the realms of absurdism.
Yeah.
And I'm always amazed and fascinated by how they kind of keep the momentum and they stay entertaining, because I think, you know, sometimes you think of that kind of humour and you can think, oh, that might be quite fleeting. How do you, you know, prolong that over over a whole show? And I always find, like, it's a real skill.
Well, you have to think about the show. I think there's a lot of comedy, actually, which like 20 minutes of one-liners, say, is probably about as much as you can take without something else, without something changing, sure, or some theatrical experience. Because you've got to make something happen in the room with people. You have to have some emotional journey, or just even just the build-up and release of tension, because that's what laughter is. You build tension and then you let it out. That's how a joke works.
Sure.
So, yeah, you can't, like, you have to find some journey to go on or some shape for the show. You can't just do nonsense for, or very few people can get away with just pure nonsense for an hour, because yeah, the momentum runs out.
It needs some kind of
structure.
So
the show is structured and has various sort of stories in it and the rest of it to keep that, to keep people entertained. And I think also, as soon as people have the kind of idea of a joke, I stop it just before they're satisfied. Just when people go, oh, I'd like a little bit more of this, that's when you should move on to the next thing.
Sure, so I like that. I like that a lot. Oh, I don't know if we're allowed to talk about some of the specifics of the show, because I don't want to give spoilers.
Okay, well, I think it's fine.
Because I was going to, because I haven't seen this yet, but yeah, I'm very excited to see it. I understand that you have a moment with God,
yeah,
with
I our pray Lord, to God, and quite a lot
with our Lord and Savior,
yeah. So the show is basically it's a manifesto for absurdism. It's also a list of the 24 missing Spice Girls, Mel A and Mel's D through Z, and then this is broken up with various. I speak to God, and I have little monologues with God, which allows me to speak secretly in front of an audience while the audience hear what I say.
Beautiful. I love that.
Hi, my name is Savannah Brown. I'm a writer and a spoken word poet, and I had the best time at FooBar today. It was so fun, so just conversational and chill. Callum was so easy to talk to. There were some jokes, but then we talked about some more serious stuff too. So I think it kind of covers all your ground. Some fun, some thoughtful stuff, but everything. A lot of fun. FooBar's the best.
FooBar Radio presents Harriet Rose. Elle Devine is in the studio with me right now, babes.
Hello. Like, my best friend Niall was really into music, and I just like to copy everything he did, but like try and do it better. So I was really competitive as a child, so that's how I kind of got into music at first. We'd like played in little bands and stuff just in my spare bedroom, and like we took the mattress off the bed frame and then like performed on the bed frame stage and got our other friend to like flick the lights on and off, and it was like special.
That's absolutely sick.
Yeah, it was amazing. Sold out show.
Whoa.
Every Thursday from 4 p.m. on FooBar Radio.
Taylor Gray's on the line. How's it going?
Oh, it's great. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's lovely to have you. How's England treating you? Because I know you've been here for a couple of days now, because you're currently on tour with the Vamps.
I'm never leaving. I love it here.
Oh, lovely. You're on the Four Corners tour right now. I believe you've done two nights, Sheffield and Newcastle. Is that right?
Yeah, two nights. Yeah.
How's it gone so far? How have the crowds... I mean, it sounds like really well. Have we treated you well? Has the crowds been nice to you?
Yes. I mean, it's so lovely being here. You know, it's always nerve-wracking as an opener, right?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, no, and I'm in a foreign country, like... What's going to happen? But everyone's been so welcoming and so lovely to me. I've just like blown away.
Oh, that's so nice as well. Especially a band like the Vamps. They've got obviously a very intense fan base. And it's so nice to hear that they're so accepting and kind of like loving your music as well. Because that's the most important thing about doing an opener, isn't it? Kind of getting those new fans involved.
Absolutely. And just, you know, trying to get people excited for the show. And I mean, obviously people already are, like, but that's like, you know, that's your job going into it. You're like, how do I put on the best show possible? And just everyone's been so, so lovely. I'm just like, oh, I want to move here.
Yay! Oh, we'll definitely do, because we'd love to have you, babe. We'd love to have you. But whilst you're in the UK, is there anything... Because, I mean, you've travelled to the UK before, but this is the first tour you've done with the Vamps, am I right?
Yeah, this is the first time I'm touring in the UK. I did a couple shows with them in my hometown last year, of San Francisco and Los Angeles. But which is lovely.
Which is so nice, but here it's a totally different vibe, because I think we've got a bit of a reputation... UK audiences.
Oh yeah.
Has it matched up to your expectations, or is it totally different to what you thought, the crowd wise?
Oh, it surpassed it far and away.
Oh, great. Because that's not always the case. Sometimes we can be a bit of a nightmare, us UK people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because we're quite quiet. Sometimes we can be a bit quiet, but I'm glad to hear that we haven't been quiet.
No, very loud and proud, and I love it.
Oh, brilliant. And what about the boys? Do they got any bad habits? Are you experiencing any of the downsides of being on tour with a group of lads?
Oh my gosh, no. You know, that's one thing, is like, when you're with a bunch of guys. I guess I'm used to it because my band is mostly guys. Yeah. But like, I just don't think I've ever met a group of guys just more humble and nice. And like, they just sing all the time. It's like, wow, like you live up to, they live up to like everything and more with their expectations.
Oh, that's so nice as well, because it's always good to, when you're touring, it's quite a vulnerable place, isn't it? It's quite a vulnerable kind of time in when you're making music. You kind of go out, and especially if you're touring with someone else, to know that they're kind of just as into it as you are and just as nice people as you are.
Absolutely, yeah. They're all about their music, which is so lovely, because you don't always see that.
No, and also you've worked with loads of artists in the past, Flo Rida, Fall Out Boy, Walk the Moon, like many, many, many great artists. Is there any future collaborations that you want to create, or ones that maybe are on the horizon that we can know about?
I mean, you know, I would always love a part two collaboration with the Vamps.
Yeah,
I did a song. Yeah, I mean, like, what a better time, right?
Well, this is, you can get recording while you're there, babe. Two birds, one stone. That's what I'm saying.
I will take your advice.
Please do, because we want it. We want part two. And you can't hint it if you've got to give it to us now.
Oh, you're right. I know. I'll have to get on it. It's hard about when they're touring. They're so busy. Everyone's so busy.
I know. And also, you can't really talk about busy. You're currently studying at Stanford University. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Good girl. You are busy. You are busy. Studying, singing, recording. How do you fit it all in?
Coffee. Like that. That's the only answer I ever give, because it's like I'm always on 100% focus, like do the show, come off, write a paper, you know, it's like nothing ever stops, but it's nice.
Whoa. And aren't you studying neuroscience?
Yeah, the brain.
Whoa. Like, that's crazy. I don't even know what that means, let alone would be able to study it. So kudos to you for having so much brain power.
Oh, thank you. I mean, like, honestly, I barely figured it out, too, what it meant. So we're in the same boat. I guess I'm just getting a degree for it.
Well, if you need any tips, just let me know, babes. Just let me know.
Oh, thank you.
Do you think it's helped with any of your songwriting stuff? Kind of, because it's obviously a totally different subject and a totally different focus, but surely it's extended your sort of knowledge base to the point where it helps and kind of infiltrates when you're writing or when you're working on music.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just understanding how people work is very helpful. And then you kind of like analyze people in a different way now. If you're writing a song about someone, you're like, I think, ooh, I know why they did this. Or like, it's definitely their daddy issues.
Oh my God, so, yes!
Hi, I'm Mae Muller, and I've just been on the Harriet Rose show at FUBAR Radio. It's always so much fun to come down here. I love Harriet, and we always have a good old chat. It's been great. Thank you for having me.
FUBAR Radio presents Ian
Boltsworth. We're joined now by Jamie Hensley.
My only knowledge of Union J was I thought they were a pretend band in Kick-Ass.
Kick-Ass. And this, yeah. Right, so
I didn't know it was
Kick-Ass,
real.
No, absolutely. Nor did the whole world. And then our management and our label were like, oh, by the way, you're going to be in Kick-Ass. And I was like, how? What? How on earth are you going to fit us in? I think basically they wanted One Direction. I think One Direction got a little bit too big to do it. So they're like, right, so let's get another boy band. But wasn't really going to do anything for us, okay, to broaden our horizons. But I think we missed a trick of going over there and promoting it, being like, oh, yeah, we are a British band. Blah, yeah. Blah. Everyone just thought we were actors playing a cheesy boy band.
That's what I thought.
Every Monday.
Ian Boltsworth.
FUBAR Radio.
I'm joined now by Maxim Baldry. Hello, Maxim.
Hi.
Can I call you Max?
Yeah, you can. You can call me whatever you want.
It's too long.
Well, don't
me.
Say that. You can call you whatever you want.
What?
Max, stick with Max for now.
What about what? Bill?
Bill?
Do you like to be called Bill?
Yeah, yeah. My best friend's called Bill.
And do you envy him? Do you wish you were him?
Yeah, he's sat in an office right now.
Yeah, but you're doing really well, so why do you want to be Bill so much? That's all you've talked about since you've
been
in.
Am I doing well? I'm just talking about Bill the whole time.
You are doing well, because I just read your CV. Now, I know that everyone like bigs himself up on the CV. And you've done a bit of bigging up here, because you've put Mr. Beans Holiday in bold. That's what you've done there. Just showing off about it.
You would.
I don't know, Mr. Beans Holiday. Was that
my
a good
first
one?
Role?
Was it really?
Yeah.
How old were you?
I was 11.
That's cool. Yeah. And was it a big role?
It was. Yeah. I went on like a trip around France with Mr. Bean.
No, that's not really who he is.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
did they just say to you
when I was 11?
Do you not break character?
I remember I was in the audition room and I walked in and I met Rowan Atkinson for the first time. Mm. And I just looked at him and I was like, oh my God, it's Mr. Bean. And then he has the most black sense of humor. He's just so serious. And I just couldn't believe it when I was a kid.
Right.
I was like, what? This is mental.
Because did you only know him from Mr. Bean at 11, I guess?
Only, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, this is the guy I've watched on TV growing up when I was a little
kid. And he inhabits that role. He totally inhabits that role. So it would be plausible to think he's like that in real life.
Yeah. But he's not.
I know that.
He doesn't know.
He's played like some other fairly well-known roles, like in Blackadder. I don't think he's got an exclusive now
that Ronan Atkinson isn't actually like that in real life.
Johnny English, another big one.
Oh, yeah.
Were you in that?
Yeah.
No.
All right.
No, didn't get the call up.
Did you not?
No.
I saw the first Bean film, and I thought it was genuinely brilliant.
Really?
Yeah, it really surprised me, the first Bean film.
But you didn't see the follow-up?
No.
It's a shame, because you would have
seen... More critically acclaimed.
No. Was it?
Bigger box office. Don't
Did
worry
Mel Smith
it.
Direct it, though? Mel Smith directed the first
no,
one.
No, he didn't. He didn't direct the second
May
one. Maybe
rest
that,
in
yeah.
peace.
Oh.
Yeah, he's away now. Oh. That's all right, though.
It was a while ago.
The most things last year.
Who? Mel Smith?
Or the year before, yeah.
Was it?
The Mel Smith died, yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a while ago. Well, fact check that.
It depends what you consider a while, doesn't it?
3 years. I don't remember.
Do you want to Google it now?
Yeah, I'll just have a look. Mel Smith.
Sorry, I know this is your interview, but we need to find out when Mel Smith died.
It is important.
Do you aware of who Mel Smith is?
He directed the first Mr. Bean
film. Oh, 2013?
Gosh, 2013.
It was a while ago, yeah.
It was a while ago,
so
you're
I
right.
Thought, yeah.
That's a shame it was that long ago. But come on, there's still some of us are still here. So we're
the highlight of my career is still Mr. Bean.
Is it really?
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Do you get recognised from it? Cause if
weirdly,
were
I get recognised in the weirdest of times.
Right.
Always when you least expect it. Always when I'm like wearing the weirdest thing.
Right.
You know? I was working in a pub once, and this is when I was in between jobs.
Okay.
As an actor.
Yeah.
You have moments, you have times, you have times.
You should treasure that time as well.
Yeah, and so I was working behind this bar, and everyone it was like more of a bar, and everyone had to wear this stripy top, and I looked like a sailor, and it was very weird. Anyway, I honestly never get recognised, and then this guy comes up to me and goes, "Oh my God, you're the guy from Mr. Bean's Holiday, the kid," and I'm like, "For fuck's sake,
that is
come on!"
Yeah, and I'm working behind a bar.
I'm working behind a bar, and then he went to me. So you're not doing the acting thing then? And I was like, yeah, no, I am.
You could have been
Fancy
like,
a Peroni.
I'm researching for a role.
I'm doing
a
film right now.
Yeah, I'm just doing
I'm
in
character.
Filming this right
yeah,
now.
That's
what I should do.
That's what I should say.
Yeah,
I would say.
Oh, I should have said
that. You should
that,
totally do that. So if you're ever working a job between jobs, you should totally just, everyone comes up and go, no, move. We're filming it now.
Yeah.
Move. You're in shot. And people just fuck off.
Cut, please.
And then we'll just look out for you. They'll just keep Googling you. See when that film's coming out that they wandered past in.
Oh God, I've done some weird jobs. Very weird.
You look
jobs.
About, like, 12. How old are you?
Now?
Yeah.
About 12?
No, I'd say no, with the stuff where you look about 18,
You
19.
Look really proper young.
Really?
Yeah.
How old are you?
45.
No. Come on, Bill. That's not true.
How old are you?
Wrong. 23.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so you're still, like... How can you have done loads of things?
As a child in Mr. Bean's
child
Holiday.
Actor.
Yeah, I just, yeah.
Has it affected you in a bad way, being a child actor?
Yeah.
Child faith?
Nah, I'm seriously troubled by
by the
successes of my childish successes.
If you're not, then you'll have to be at some point in your career, because that's when you'll have a resurgence in your career. When your career starts going, oh, it's plateauing a little bit, then that's when you want to bring in, oh yeah, Rowan Atkinson was a cock to me. Like, do you know what I mean? You start saying, oh yeah, he really was really abusive.
Because he was nothing like Mr. Bean. I was livid.
Yeah, he was nothing like Mr. Bean, because he swore in my face regularly. Same thing.
I don't think he did, so just clout what he made.
Yeah, just for the record, this never happened.
No, this hasn't happened yet. But he'll be long gone, Atkinson, at that point. When it gets to the stage of Maxine's career.
Like 20 years time.
Well, no, wait. Let's not write Rowan Atkinson off in the next 20 years.
Point. I don't know how old
he definitely won't live longer than the next 20 years. Right, but whenever it is, Maxim will have a long and varied career.
Yeah, sure.
And then when he's in his like 50s or whatever, and it's sort of plowed out a little bit, and you need to bring a story back and go, do you remember Rowan Atkinson?
Who
died a few years ago? Like, yeah. Oh, yeah, it was terrible. Yeah, no, he wasn't how he seemed at all. Which will be the truth. That is the truth.
He wasn't like Mr. Bean.
He wasn't as he seemed. It's true.
Very serious.
Hello, it's Lauren Harris here. I've just finished on Fubar Radio. And all the interviews I've ever done, I think he's the most unusual presenter I've worked with. It's a good thing. He's a very interesting, quite emphatic and deep person. So you never know what's going to come out of his mouth next, which is good. Also, he's got a very interesting technique of interviewing, which I like, because I've been interviewed over 32 years of being in the business, and he does go quite deep in a very relaxed atmosphere. Of all the presenters I've worked with, I think he's quite a deep person generally, which is lovely, really sweet man. And if he says anything about what I mentioned, I'll kill him, but he knows that. But what you see is what you get, and that's what I'm like, so I think we're definitely related to one another.
Okay, ready. Let's do it.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Bob is the guy that thinks he's fine, also known as a buster. Always talking about what he wants and just sits on his broken soul. No, I don't want your number, no. I don't wanna give you mine, and no. I don't wanna meet you nowhere, no. Don't want none of your time, and no. I don't want no scrub. The scrub is the guy that can't get none of from me. Hanging out the passenger side of his best friend's ride, trying to holler at me. No scrub, the scrub is a guy that can't get no love from me. Hanging out the passenger side of his best friend's ride, trying to holler at me.
He's still checking me, but his game is kinda weak, and I know that he cannot approach me. Cause I'm looking like class and he's looking like trash. Can't get with a deadbeat ass. So no, I don't want your number, no. I don't wanna give you mine, and no, I don't wanna meet you nowhere, no. Don't want none of your time. I don't want no scrub. Scrub is a guy that can't get no love from me. Hanging out the passenger side, his best friend's ride, trying to holler at me. I don't want no scrub. Scrub is a guy that can't get no love from me. Hanging out the passenger side of his best friend's ride, trying to holler at me.
Hey, car, and you're walking. Oh yes, son, I'm talking to you. If you live at home with your mama. Oh yes, son, I'm talking to you. If you have a shorty that you don't show love. Oh yes, son, I'm talking to you. Wanna give a lift with no money?
Presents Joey Page.
One of my favourite bands all time. It's Drenge. Owen and Rory, how you doing?
Hello.
Hi, Joey. You're right.
What was the first band that you ever was in a mosh pit to?
Our teacher's band. He was in a band called Bromhead's Jacket, and he was our ICT teacher. I think I was about 14.
Pretty heavy going.
It was terrifying. Most of the gig, I was off my feet.
What kind of a IT teacher is that?
Great teacher, yeah.
Well, not a great teacher.
No, he was a great teacher. Great, I think, guy. We had like an hour-long lesson with him once where he just talked about William Wallace. Yeah, he was pretty chill.
He did nothing. He literally did nothing. There wasn't a lesson plan.
Every Wednesday from 2 p.m. on FUBAR Radio.
I'm very excited about my next guests. They've specifically come all the way from the US. It's always lovely when we get somebody who's done all that travelling and a massive guest. They've got a new album which has just come out, and I'm very excited to be talking to Kelsey and Nick from Local Natives. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Hello.
The new album, Violet Street, came out on Friday.
48 hours ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now that it's been out for like a couple of days, do you just feel relieved at this point? Does it still surprise you being the fourth album? Is there things where you're like, you never get used to? Or just tell us a bit about the experience of being a couple of days removed from the actual release date.
I mean, I think making records, waiting, like you're working on something for a year, year and a half, and you like think like, oh, this is the thing that's going to go off, or like this thing, like I'm really excited about. But there's always these wild card songs that you never can tell like what is gonna pop off or not.
So for you on this album, what is a wild card song?
Well, there was this song called Someday Now that like a lot of us liked. Some liked a lot, others people were like, oh, it's pretty cool. And and that one seems to have really risen to like the top of, I feel like, what, like we're like scouring social media and like seeing like how it's going,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Much to our detriment sometimes, but we're braving it. Nick
the
and
internet,
I are the bravest on social
the
media.
Right, is a okay. dark place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys have done quite a lot of late night talk show performances, so I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about what that's like to do. So I think that's something that our listeners would really be excited to hear about.
They're always bizarre. I feel like there's like this glitz and glamour that obviously the camera shows and you're pretty excited about, but it's always a pretty cold television studio.
Yeah,
and you're
right.
Playing in front of tourists who have no idea who you are and probably don't really care.
And also
about
they're
you.
Sat in studio seats, so it's not like they're going to be up and dancing
yeah,
around.
Yeah, they've
like
been waiting
be
like
gig.
An hour and they're like, oh, we're almost out of here, but wait. We got this other band playing. But they're pretty cool. I feel like those are special experiences, like playing Letterman or...
Letterman was fun. I had an interesting situation at the end of our set. We all play with in-ears in, so they're in-ear yep. monitors. So they're the kind of like... They're great for playing live, but like if someone's trying to talk to you like in front of your face, you can barely hear them.
Right.
And at the end of the set, at the end of the song, David Letterman comes up to us. And he's like, and this is like my only conversation with David Letterman. He's like, oh, where are you guys from? And here, I'll go over here. So like, it makes sense. So I was just like, Silver Lake! He's like, cool, thanks. And then he leaves and just, no, and everyone is like making fun of me all the
well,
time.
Because normally like people will be like, you have Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, like major city. He shouted out Silver Lake, and it took him like a sec. He was like, Silver Lake? Oh, by Dodger Stadium. Like it was like such
right.
a specific neighborhood.
Yeah,
to,
yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. As I was doing my sort of research, this is a thing that for some reason I'm obsessed with at the moment, but I just find it phenomenal. On Spotify, which I know is not necessarily where musicians would like all their music to be consumed because they make a lot of money from that, but you've got... well over 2 million listeners a month. How does it feel to have that like that number of people every month are listening to your music? That's so cool, right?
Pretty
I'm gonna
awesome.
Be honest, it feels good.
I would say one
feels
more
pretty good
because that's like I can't fathom that as like I'd be like, oh, if 2 million people ever knew anything about me, I would be so like, I don't know what I would do with that information.
Yeah,
so I
yeah.
just wonder what you think about that as a piece of information.
It feels good. It's like, I feel like it's all kind of going in the right direction, and that's cool. At the same time, it feels like alternative indie rock music isn't like the coolest thing right
no,
now.
Right.
So we're
and is that a bit
like
frustrating?
Up against that,
do you know? Do you find that a little bit frustrating? Do you think, oh, I wish that my genre was the one that was at the forefront of the moment? Because then I would be like... a billionaire.
Well, like, I mean, I wish that the genre was in, like, a cool spot and we were making music in the 90s. Mm. Then, like, we'd be fucking billionaires.
Of course.
That would be,
yeah.
that would be the difference.
I think we like the art and the music that we make.
Yeah, sure.
Like we have our tendencies. And at the same time, like, that music that is at the forefront of culture right now, like, I'm a fan of, so it's like, I can't really be too mad because I'm consuming it. In
right,
a,
yeah. No, like, we're right there with, like, everyone, but we benefited so much in, like, the 2000s, like, the later 2000s, where I feel like indie rock was, like, cooler and bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
And that really gave us our start.
Well, I think it's cooler now because it's not bigger, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like...
I hear that. Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
People
for sure.
really get behind their bands, and it's not just, like... manufactured out like it did get to a point in the 2000s where that was happening. And so on that kind of subject, you know, this is your fourth album, it's just come out, you're touring all over the world, you get to do so many cool things as a band, but do you sit down and go, right, this is what we want to do next? Do you have a plan, or do you just go, right, we'll just keep on like going at it, or do you have an actual structured game plan where we're like, in a year we want to be this, in 2 years we want to be that?
There's goals, there's like dreams that we have, and we're always just trying to take a step forward and try to figure out how to be like making music forever, and we want to be having, you know, as much success at it as we can while making music we're really pumped on. But the thing about plans is they're always changing, and have to be like ready to turn the ship at any second to react to something. And so I don't know, I feel like now 4 albums in, we're kind of in a zen place where we're, one, really happy that anyone is listening at all, even, you know, indie rock's in a slump, blah blah blah, whatever. Like, we're stoked on what we're doing, and so like anybody we can get in the boat is awesome. A lot of boat metaphors on my end.
I like it.
I'm being very
You're aware of your boat.
I'm aware of my
boat. It's because you're in a maritime country.
Well, you're in
now.
My boat now. I want to keep you safe in my boat.
I want to
keep everyone, whoever gets in the boat, I want to keep them safe.
And
you can see local natives tomorrow night on the River Thames.
That is right. Come aboard.
Hello, this is Andy Bell. I'm in a band called Erasure. My FUBAR experience was really amazing, quite something else, not that I'm used to. I think they need to do a chat show, because chat show host is so boring, and that was very interesting.
FUBAR Radio presents Accessible
Areas. We have a brand new presenter in instead of Lizzie. Welcome, Ellie Phillips.
Hi.
I don't know if you've been watching Dancing on Ice, but I'm sure you've heard about Gemma Collins and the drama going on with her.
Taken over.
So she's apparently lost a little bit of weight doing Dancing on Ice. Apparently, two whole stone.
I did see some pictures, so maybe ice skating's way forward.
Maybe we all need to get on the ice rink.
Sack the gym off. Get down the little ice rink.
Well, I mean, I would rather go on I'm a Celebrity and eat bugs than go on an ice rink, to be honest.
Every Thursday. Access all areas. From 6 p.m.
FUBAR Radio.
Ricky Garnaccio.
Oh, you're listening.
Hello, Ricky.
What's going on, Ricky?
Hey, baby girl.
Hey, baby. Have I said your surname correct? I've tried.
Garnaccio.
Okay.
Every time.
I'll just call you Ricky.
Every year.
I know, I'm sorry. Because obviously we loved you on Geordie Shore. You were there from 2012, 2013. Do you miss not doing it?
Nope.
That was quick.
It was good, don't get us wrong. But, I mean, we all went back for the big birthday battle a few years back. I mean, I came back from Australia for it, and it was just, when you've got that many people in the show, we're trying to film, there's 16 of us. And wow. It wasn't the same as when I first went in that series two.
Right.
And we were just all just going, I was just going crazy and stuff, but I don't know, man. It was good. Obviously, it's given us the platform to do everything that I'm doing now and stuff. But yeah, I mean, those days are going out every single night.
It's a long time ago now.
Drinking twice a day, man. Having 2 hangovers a day. Yeah.
Come on, I'll do that as well. My PAs. Can't talk too much about it.
You boys and your PAs.
I'm 32 now, Jack.
All right, okay, then. There we go.
He's calming down. But I have to say, Ricky, I loved you when you did Celebrity Big Brother. I mean, that must have been one hell of an experience for you.
I don't want to sound a bit negative towards every TV show, isn't it?
But you're glad it's over.
It was boring.
Really?
I was 27 when I went in there, and obviously when you go in there, you think, oh, you're going to be partying, you're going to be drinking, or doing whatever, really. But you've got 3 rooms to go between, and then they weren't giving us, I think, because Charlotte did the series before me, I think they cut back with Ofcom with giving them drink. So when I went in, we were getting nothing between 14 of us. So I was like, you put a 27-year-old party boy in a house with no tools.
Yeah.
I'm bored. give me something to do.
You were getting restless.
Yeah.
So what's going on? Because listen, on the 1st of May, it's my birthday was on the 2nd of May. Thanks for the present, Ricky. But on the 1st of May, you wrote a little tweet saying, when's Single Appreciation Day? So what's going on? Are you single? What's going on with the love life?
Yeah, of course I'm single. I mean, I'm going back to Australia at the end of this year. I'm obviously looking for property over there. I'm buying. I'm moving over there for good. Can I take this weather anymore? So yeah, I've been single for 3 years, but I mean, Jack will tell you this. When you travel around doing PAs and you travel in different countries and stuff like that, it's hard to settle down with a bird, especially being the public eye.
Yeah, you can't.
It's just hard to find someone you're generally right. I'm picky, Liz. Yeah. I'm really, really picky.
It's good to be picky.
Yeah, listen. In his defence, he's doing his career. He's travelling the world. Sometimes it's hard to have
a
girl.
But he's in his 30s now. He needs to think about.
Excuse me.
course, don't mention age,
plastic,
right?
The plastic surgery and Botox makes me look 25.
But, I mean, do you find that you want to have, if you did have a girlfriend, it would be someone famous, or would you rather not have that?
I'm
again?
Because
you've got so much attention with all the press and stuff, or is it...
Yeah, I mean, obviously, that relationship, I mean, it's still obviously ongoing with people talking about it and people wanting interviews on it and still all that and all that bollocks kind of thing. But, I mean, it's just part and parcel of being the public eye. Everyone wants to know what you're doing, who you're with, and how you're doing this. Everything's magnified. Obviously, when it comes to a public relationship with someone else in the public eye, it's kind of like, if it does go west, then, I mean, your side wants to be said, and then their side wants to be said, and that's the only issue with it.
Right. So
it's kind of like, obviously... Yeah, but then you've got, obviously, people that aren't in the public eye, and, I mean, everyone wants to be famous these days. Everyone. So you just don't know who
it's difficult. I'm new to this. Like, I'm quite new to this.
See, I'm also...
But I find it difficult. I find it difficult when a girl comes up to me. I'm like, are you here because you want to be with me, or are you here just because...
Yeah. Jack's too busy doing his little dance videos.
Yeah. We're really rocking that one real quick. Yeah,
taking those slapping cheeks.
Yeah, come on.
You might get yourself a nice Aussie girl.
I hear Strictly calling.
My phone's on. Yeah, it's quite. I keep it closed. My phone's on.
I'm best friends with Bruno. I'm telling you,
I have got hip movements. You know, I've got the hip movements. Trust me.
I've seen them.
You do, man. Smooth operator.
Like you did, South Wicky.
Yeah.
Now, what do you think? I've heard Adam Collard might be going into the Geordie Shore house. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I saw something yesterday. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, with Geordie Shore now, I mean, the whole cast really sort of changed, Liz. I mean, I'm just giving my honest opinion as well. I mean, it's not really Geordie Shore anymore when they go out and get tans and when they go to the gym. And it was kind of, it was based on Jersey Shore. And that's how we got our TV show off the back of them. But, I mean, the whole kind of...
It's changed, hasn't
thing,
it?
The thing with it now, it's kind of like the preferred... in-house relationships. You don't see the lads going out anymore and really pulling birds and stuff like that.
So your series is the series that I used to watch, but it was just a free-for-all. Like, you knew when you was turning Geordie Shore on, yeah, you knew some shit was going down. But, now it's a bit different.
And that's what I'm saying. It's not really...
It's staged.
I don't look at it as Geordie Shore, really. I mean, it's what I was saying. If you get all the... I mean, with Jersey Shore, they've just filmed another series of all them back together. I mean... You've got Paulie D, who's 38. You've got the situation, who's now in prison, but he's 40.
I'll take him a paper.
He'll be Skyping it.
But it would have been cool to get us all one time backing us, Charlotte, Gaz, and get me and Jay and everyone like that, and get us back for one more series.
I think they should do a reunion of the old school.
Yeah, they should do a reunion.
Geordie Shore. Because they were fun days. I enjoyed watching you, Ricky, but I adore you anyway. You know that.
I spent longer out the house than I did in the house to get kicked out. I got fined more than I bloody earned during that TV show,
man. It's true.
Fubar Radio presents
Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville.
It is, of course, Low Key.
Oh, thank you so much, Aaron. If you were to listen to a lot of the music that's pumped out by the corporate media, you would not know at what period of time you were listening to that music. All of the greatest artists, when we think of John Lennon, when we think of Bob Marley, you know, John Lennon was funding the Black Panthers at one point and on very good terms with Bobby Seale. Bob Marley was intrinsically linked to politics in Jamaica and was in many ways a game changer, actually, with what he was doing. Some of the greatest artists of yesteryear, if you listen to their music, it's almost like listening to a historical document.
Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville.
Every Wednesday
from 4 p.m.
FUBAR Radio.
We've got our second guest of the day in. His name is Monroe. Good to meet you, sir.
Good to meet you guys. Yeah.
It's nice to kind of put a face to the music because we've been supporting your music for weeks now.
And also with last year with Gone Clear as well.
With the production you did for Flo Hiyo.
Thank you so much.
Not at all. You know. We can only do our bit. You know. You've done it all. You know? you've made all the music that we get to play.
Thank you,
Monroe. Thank you. We wouldn't be hearing it if you weren't playing it. So.
Well, I hear that. How did the kind of collaboration with Flo Hiyo come about?
That was a while ago. I think we reached out to her just being like, you're sick.
She is.
Yeah, she's so hard. So she came in. I was with Rince then, so she came into the studios there.
Yeah.
And I think that was the first song we made. And I was like, I really want this for myself.
Yeah. Okay, so you were signed to Rince, Rince label.
As management, yeah. And I released the first EP. Actually, brilliant. I released that song with Rince as well.
Yeah. But now it's all about Blind Faith, right? The new label's Blind Faith.
The new label is Blind Faith, with me and my manager.
Nice.
Fuck. Yeah.
It's nice getting to do like everything yourself, isn't it?
Definitely. You know? There's so much more. I feel like I have so much more control.
Yeah.
Now, and just more. Like, if I want to put something out tomorrow, I can put it out
the
tomorrow.
The pace is all yours as well, isn't it?
Exactly.
Autonomy is the name of the game.
Yeah, 100%.
It's the key, should I say. This year, what are the plans? Because, you know, last year it was... it's been this year that you put out the instrumental, Respawn. But now your the current release is it features Donovan Livingston's Harvard graduation speech.
Yeah, yeah. Are you familiar with it? Did you ever hear it?
I have. Is that the one where he? I'm pretty sure it is. It's really rousing, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing.
Was it a valedictorian speech or something like that?
Harvard graduate. Yeah,
it was
a graduate.
I'm pretty sure I've heard it. Mm-hmm. But if not. I'm sure we'll get to when we play the song. Yeah. What made you decide to use that as the kind of vocals?
It was weird. I was like having one of them days in the studio where I'm like, ah, nothing's working. I feel like you have those down days where you're like, is this gonna happen? You know, going inside your head, and I was like flicking through YouTube, and that popped up, and I was like, ah. This is like super inspiring, super motivating, and just the way that he put his words together about just pushing yourself forward and being the best like person you can be. I was just like, this is sick. But when I was watching it, I started like playing like a couple chords to it, and I was like, oh, this is cool. Let me just rip this, take this, and then mess around with it.
Incredible, incredible. You don't get that a lot, do you? You know, obviously people will kind of use a spoken word artists and that, and it's very kind of planned and not you know, contrived isn't it's a negative word, I suppose, but you know, it's all planned out. But when you're genuinely inspired by something so much that you want to put music into it, I think that's a completely different ball game.
Definitely. And the other vocal that went with that was like an old song that I did with a guy called Thurs,
right?
From he was in a group called UNI in LA,
right?
And that I was just like, oh, Blind Faith and what I do, that goes perfectly like with the message.
Yeah. So did you go uni yourself?
No, I didn't. No. That was a good segue. No, I didn't. I was going to go to Leeds Met to do music production.
Yeah.
And I was literally like, I think it was a few weeks before I was going to go, my dad was like, why are you going to uni if you want to do music production? Not judging anyone. Yeah.
No, at all. It's not for everyone. Like, You're absolutely right. Yeah. You know, there are if you kind of want to learn something, yeah, absolutely go to uni. You know, if you got 9 grand spare, but if you kind of feel like you have this talent, which is natural, you can't teach certain things.
It just comes out of you.
Absolutely.
When you go in,
so. Absolutely.
Did you guys go?
No. I went. No. I tried 3 times and I did. Yeah. I started degrees that I thought I would never ever use in later life. The one I spent longest doing was philosophy. But then every single day I thought, I think philosophically anyway, this is another thing that I don't really need to be taught, if you like. Mm. Obviously, maybe I need to be taught the big philosophers like Descartes and their theories and stuff, but at the same time, why does that even matter? You know, because none of them proved anything. It was always just kind of conjecture. The only one I actually believe is cogito ergo sum anyway. Okay. And if you like, you know, just I think therefore I am, right, I know we exist, and I'll just kind of stop there and kind of build on that myself of my own accord. So yeah,
definitely.
I pulled out of uni 3 times, man.
So what were your
other two? English and journalism, specifically the press in Britain.
I don't even know this. What made you go on the third time? You know, third time isn't a charm.
Every
let me
single
not go
time,
for the fourth.
Every single time, it was actually the opposite of you know, your dad saying to you, why would you want to go to uni?
Right.
It was my parents
family
kind of
pushed
you to go.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
which I get too. I get
yeah,
that as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. But then you kind of get to the realization dawns that your parents aren't going to be living the rest of your life
exactly
for you. You only are. So you kind of have to do what
you
want to
do.
You,
it's
yeah.
different generations as well, isn't
exactly.
it? Like, so like back in them days, it would have been like education was your main thing. Obviously, it's good to get an education.
Absolutely.
But to do the things that you want to do, you might not like need an education to do them, like music. You know
for
what
real.
I mean?
Yeah.
For
unless
real.
You're, I don't know, you have to read music. I always got told that I wouldn't make it in music if I couldn't read music.
Oh, like sheet music and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Like, my music teacher was like, oh yeah, you won't make it in music if you can't read.
Yeah.
So
fuck
I was
him.
Like shit myself.
It's
like,
always the teachers, isn't it?
Yeah, fuck
but then you, but
fuck
then
them.
You just recall the phrase, those who can do, those who can't
exactly.
teach.
Yeah,
no
yeah.
offence to teachers. Again.
We love teachers.
We do love teachers.
Good teachers.
Only when they encourage you. Teachers is also one of my favourite drinks, so
What is that, whiskey? That.
Yes.
Is it?
Love
the
a good,
teachers. It feels like an older gentleman's drink to me.
I'm an older gentleman. I can't be an older gentleman.
What are you trying to say?
I'm saying you're a young man.
I'm an older gentleman. Thank you. I identify as an older gentleman.
I just couldn't imagine. It's like, yeah. I've never heard that.
Is that on the rocks?
On the rocks. Okay. Ask me on the rocks. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Because I'm an older gentleman.
Yeah, okay.
Get me.
Hey, I'm Will Merrick. I just did the Michael and Marcel show for FUBAR. They were very welcoming. I had a sick time. Very nice guys. Dressed excellently, very quick and welcoming. It was fun. Played a little game as well. That was a real treat. It was a dench.
FUBAR Radio presents
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club.
Our guest now, Daniel Lawrence Taylor.
Hello.
The creator of the sitcom Time Wasters.
Yes.
And I can imagine if we do a Series 3, the amount of stuff that I will get rid of for Series 3 as well.
A couple more white people, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, I'd probably get rid of all the white people, actually, and just make it all black. That's my aim. Just an all black sitcom where we just are racist to white people.
Wow.
If that's even possible.
That's kind of crazy.
It is, but that's comedy.
Every Friday,
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club
from 12 PM. FUBAR Radio.
We've not watched anything this week.
Want to tell you what else I watched.
Oh, what?
I watched Howard the Duck for the first time in about 30 years. I used to watch it a lot when I was a kid, though. I thought it was a real. Now you watch it and you go, God, this isn't for kids.
He's watching.
All.
He's reading Play Duck, right?
Yeah.
And it's a duck with feathered tits. On
yeah,
the front.
But you see them.
yeah, you see them.
There's a duck in the bath as well. There's more. It's like
see her tits.
Duck nudity.
And then Lee Thompson falls in love with Howard the Duck and fucks the duck.
She doesn't.
They fuck.
People say that people
fuck a duck. Fuck a duck.
But it is weird. I mean, you go, this is for kids. She opened up his wallet and he's got duck condoms, but it's not in a wrapper. It's just like a sort of weird. It's just the actual condom.
Yeah.
It's just like, this is a PG. This was like, you can't work out who it's aimed. Then the rest of it, you go, but it is like a kid's film. It's just like,
yeah, but it,
totally.
It was made in a time when that was all a very grey area, where Ghostbusters was a kid's film. There was a clip of Ghostbusters 2 that came up where Ray is on the top of the Statue of Liberty and the Statue of Liberty steps on a car and Ray chats and he goes, oh, sorry. And you go, oh, that's a sweet joke. That's a sweet joke made by the guy that got a blowjob from a ghost in the first film. So we're joined in the studio now by a friend of the show, former
the show.
Fan clubber. He's already been in the fan house clubhouse once.
Love the show. Never heard it.
He's here again.
Never heard it, but love it.
You heard it once, sort of. Yeah, when you were in it.
No, I didn't hear that, though. I was part of it.
Still not introduced you yet, mate. It's weird. Okay. I mean, I wouldn't do that on your show.
I don't.
If
I would
you'd
never
ever
have
me
a show.
On. If you'd ever have me on, mate. Mark. Smudger Smith.
Yeah. Hello, Mark Smith.
One of the things that you're a big fan of is theme parks in general, but Disneyland.
Well, no. The truth is, I came back from Disneyland last week, and then when the producer asked me what I was into, that's the first thing I could remember.
But you're into it.
I
you
was for
it.
2 weeks. I was very much.
You're at Disneyland for 2 weeks?
Yeah.
No. Did you stay at Disneyland?
Fucking knackered.
Did you stay at Disneyland?
Stayed at a hotel at Universal. Called the Portofino. Bay Hotel.
I've never stayed at a Universal hotel. Are they nice?
Yeah, real nice, boy.
Are they?
Yeah, really nice.
What did you have for breakfast?
This morning?
No.
Right.
On holiday.
Come on,
varied.
Mark,
day
I'm just going to tell you, this has been a really difficult one.
Right.
Me and Nat have had not a lot to talk about.
Okay.
And we brought you on to save the day.
You brought me on because Ramesh brought
actually,
it out.
You're actually, yeah, to save the day, mate.
I'm not saving
this
the day.
This is your chance to step up here. Right?
I'm not going
to
be.
This is your chance
already
to step up
some stuff about
I'm not on the B, I won't be on the B team. This isn't good radio.
Yeah, it is.
You know what? I don't want your shitty little listeners listening to my show anyway.
Thank you.
Was it Florida?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, mate. I'm not a humpty little bitch. Florida, wasn't it?
Yeah. If Universal Studios Florida is a foot, then Universal Studio Los Angeles is a toenail.
You're not wrong.
It's fucking ridiculous, the difference.
When I went there in 1985, they were filming Thunder in Paradise there with Hulk Hogan.
All the big ones there then.
I wrote a story called Thunder in Paradise, and then I was just like, oh, fuck. Well, I've got to change the name now because the Hulkster's brought out a book, a film.
Was that you were like 13 and
I was 12 and I'd written this. It's a sci-fi epic called Thunder in Paradise. It was pretty good.
Tell us about that.
It was set in the future. Marijuana cigarettes were legal and you could buy them.
You could buy them out of
vending machines, right? They sold them in packs of 20, but because they were triangular like spliffs, they would stack them alternately top to bottom. Mm. Right?
Well, Grace, sir.
It was just a detail.
Is it just the main hook of the film?
This is just a detail in the future, right?
When I think you should read it.
When I was 11, I went to Universal and we went on the Jaws ride, and then we went back to go on the Jaws ride, and it turned out they'd only opened it for one day to test it out.
Oh, what?
And we were there for 2 weeks, and we went twice in 2 weeks, and the second time we went, Jaws ride was not on.
Well, suck my dick.
No, we went to a preview. We were one of the first people to ever go on the Jaws ride. It was absolutely incredible.
It's not there at all anymore. It's all
gone. They've concreted it over and made it into Harry Potter's toilet.
That's not what they call it, though, I don't think.
Harry Pooper's.
Didn't they say it?
Harry Pooper.
J.K. Rowling did a thing recently where she said that...
Everyone's LGBT.
No, she said Harry Potter, they all have shits, but they magic them away. There's no toilets in Hogwarts. And it was obviously a joke, but people like went mad about it.
Well, there are toilets in Hogwarts because of the toilet troll in the first Harry Potter movie.
I haven't seen it.
What's a toilet troll?
There's a huge troll in the toilets, and he smashes up all the toilets, and they're all having dinner, and someone goes, there's a troll in the toilets, and they have to go out. That's probably
why they aren't any now.
Also, what's her name?
Got smashed up.
The ghost one that's always crying. Is it her name Myrtle? She's always crying and she's always in the toilets crying. So it's weird that J.K. Rowling would say that there's no toilets in Harry Potter when in actual fact there are obviously clearly toilets in Harry Potter.
J.K. Rowling, like her toilets, is full of shit. That's what I would say.
Oh. Well, they're not because they magic them away.
Hello, I'm Jim Hosking. I was just on FUBAR Radio with Nick and Nat. It was really fun. It was good. It was funny. Very informal. No pressure. Not like being at work. Not like being in an exam. Not like being with my dad. I did swear quite a bit. I think I used the word twat a couple of times. Might have used the word fuck. And there we have it.
Tuesday Takeover with Kyle DeVol on FUBAR Radio.
I'm Kyle DeVol, celebrity stylist, and welcome to my Tuesday Takeover for FUBAR Radio. I'm joined by the lovely James Brown. Thank you so much for coming in to see me.
Hiya.
People that have been living under a rock, do you want to say who you are? And
my name is James Brown, and I am a stylist, but formerly was a hairdresser, I suppose. I still do a bit of hair, but I'm known for hair, but I'm now a stylist.
So you have worked with so many iconic people over the years. What would you say was one of your most iconic moments you can remember on set?
God. Well, Richard Avedon, when I first worked with him, because I turned up for work, and I didn't really know what the shoot was, and I turned up and he said, oh, we're recreating all my famous hair pictures. So all the, like, and I was like, what? Oh my god. It was with Tasha Tilberg, the model. She had just shaved all her head, all the sides of her hair. So basically I was like, how am I gonna do this? So I literally had to stick it with glue to just make her hair like a lioness. And then what was incredible is his assistants, they do all the wind machines. So I just watched these iconic images happening in front of me because he knew how he wanted the hair to blow. It was just such, there were so many experiences, like working with Herb Ritts. He used to call me Hair Boy. Hair Boy, where's the Hair Boy? Get me the Hair Boy. And it was just so mad. It's all so mad. But there's so many amazing moments and amazing people. But I would talk to them really normally. You would just have a really honest, open conversation with them, and they loved that. They really, you know,
probably because everyone's always blowing smoke up their arses.
Exactly,
so it's refreshing to meet someone.
So I'm still friendly with a lot of those people, but up to the early 90s, it still was quite an elitist industry. It really was, and even towards the end of the 90s, it was still quite elitist. And I think we kicked down a few doors, you know.
Definitely, I feel like your whole squad have like paved so many paths for the rest of these new people that are coming through. Do you know what I mean? Kate alone and Naomi, like,
sure,
and you.
Sure.
So what does personal style mean to you?
I don't know. It's funny because I talk to, my mum says, oh, I don't follow fashion. And I say, well, how come you look like every other woman of your age in the village if you don't follow fashion? You do follow fashion. She said, no, I don't. It always fascinates me that people that, everyone's got sort of style in their own way. I can appreciate every look. Like, I can do a shoot and it can be a golf story. Next day I can do a shoot and it can be, you know, a boho story or whatever. I don't know. I can find something in almost anybody. But saying that, recently, I'm struggling. There's a lot of bad taste out there recently.
There is. I think it's because there's so much that's accessible now. And like before, like you couldn't get a knockoff version of a couture dress. Do you know what I mean? It was either the couture or you had to wear something else. Now you've got like places like Boohoo and House of CB that recreate these dresses for a girl that's, you know, it could be more affordable, and people just aren't dressing it right, and everyone's just like a free-for-all. It's like a bargain sale, I find, fashion these days.
It is, but I love the fact that everybody can afford it. I'm totally up for everybody, because why should it be all elitist? And I know a lot of designers at the moment are going on about, I can't even say it, sustainability, but yet they're charging £3,000 for a pair of trousers. People can't afford that.
No,
so I love that people can access everything nowadays. You know, I think it could be made slightly better, and I think it's a balance and everybody's learning. It's a learning curve, and I think it's now out there and everybody's being a little more aware about they're consuming too much fast fashion and all of that. But it's good that people could afford it. Why should it be all elitist?
Agreed.
I agree. Like that.
So what about your own personal style?
Personal style, I don't know. I mean, one day I look like a farmer, the next day I look like, I don't know.
No, you give me chic. You give me hobo chic.
Yeah.
One does it like you,
yeah,
babe.
Yeah.
You
do, but I chic. Just, I don't know. I don't have a mirror at home. I just feel it, and I never ever look in a mirror, and I don't believe in mirrors. I think if you feel good, you look good.
Agreed.
I don't know, but I was thinking the other day, I haven't worn a pair of jeans for over 3 years, but yet I've got so many pairs.
I love denim.
I haven't worn denim for over 3 years now.
So what's an everyday look for you?
God, an everyday look. I don't know. At the moment, I've just been wearing tons and tons and tons of trainers and sportswear, literally, because I've got three dogs and I'm always walking the dogs. And the dogs are on top of me and the dog's hair's all over me.
I love your dogs. Your dogs are so beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've got a horse as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I've got your horses.
She has it all.
Sheep and cows. And so I just literally need to be able to move around. But recently I've started digging out all my sort of posh clothes, as I should call them. Like, I've been wearing all my old, because I've got a massive collection of Saint Laurent three-piece suits. So I've started wearing them all to the park and stuff. I thought, what's the point in them just hanging there? I may as well start wearing them.
Yeah,
so I've now just started rocking Saint Laurent coats in the park. Yeah, exactly. I think, why not? You know?
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.